mentioned earlier, we're going to be talking about some number of the quirkiest Christmas songs from the 1980s, whatever number I said at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Or have dubbed in since. I don't know. You know, I don't know.
He said a lot of numbers.
Said clever. A lot of numbers.
It's clever.
All right. So, look, we've talked about this many times. The 1980s was, you know, again, I mean this sincerely. You've heard me say it way too many times. It was just a modern day renaissance as far as the birth and rebirth and of all forms of arts, technology, mm-hmm. everything. All things. and part of that was, you know, how diverse music was, the different types of music that were popular mm-hmm. during the time. And part of that was because of the sort of increased, what, globalization? Mm-hmm. John, am I going too far to justify a song that's called Fuck Christmas?
Yeah, well, I was just saying, at the end of this list, you might put diverse in quotes, perhaps.
Okay.
It is diverse, and then it's also just a little bit batshit crazy.
Huh. All right. Well, okay. And here's something neat too. Cool. So now that you've heard the news already, I'll tell you this. I wasn't going to tell you at the beginning, so I wanted you to listen to the news. If you go to Pandora and search for quirkiest 80s Christmas songs, mm-hmm. you will find what they call a Pandora story, mm-hmm. which is essentially the rest of our episode. But you get to hear, if you have Pandora Premium, you get to hear the entire tracks of the songs that we're describing today, right? Explaining, sharing.
That's cool.
If you have anything less than Pandora Premium, you hear 30 seconds of the song. And so if you're listening to the show on YouTube, it was taken down because YouTube copyright struck us on every single
song. You have to couch that. It's like either you get to or you're forced to hear the entire song, depending on your opinion of the song.
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah. I guess you'd skip ahead, like skip 30 seconds. You'd hit that like two times,
just
maybe
mash
four
it
times.
And you're past.
Yeah. Like, and then you hear it's like, AIDS. No. Fuck. Wookie. Is there anything on here?
Ground Zero.
Reach around.
Just skip the whole show. We'll see you next time on 1990s Now. All right. So, hey, John, why don't you kick us off and tell us about one of these wacky songs?
I'm going to start with It's Christmas in Heaven. So this was by Monty Python, and it was featured in Monty Python, The Meaning of Life in 1983. Ooh. Monty Python, The Holy Grail, of course, first aired in 1969. And they're a favorite among a lot of Gen Xers, especially myself.
Oh, yeah.
and if anybody who's armed with a dollar and a rental card, we could go down and devour The Holy Grail and The Life of Brian. Learning hilarious alternative versions of Arthurian myths and Christianity. Any 80s kid is going to know what Sir Galahad's favorite color is without having to look it up, I'm sure.
Blue. No, yellow.
So of course, the Pythons delivered an equally ridiculous take on Christmas songs in their final film, The Meaning of Life. Mm. The film's conclusion, Graham Chapman, completely like prosthetic and you can't even recognize him, kind of as a Tony Bennett-esque figure.
Yeah, giant fake teeth.
And it's actually as this party is poisoned by death. This is the end of The Meaning of Life. And they come out and it's this big showpiece.
Yeah.
And so this Tony Bennett-esque guy comes out with alongside dozens of dancing showgirls. And they're mm-hmm. they have like Santa suits or they have wings on or they look like angels, but they're also mm-hmm. totally bare-breasted. But asterisk. Well, it's clearly plastic breasts poking out from holes in their suits.
Yes. If they were going to show nudity anyway, why use fake nudity? I don't think.
Well, so they were going to use real nudity because the Pythons don't care. And
yeah, I think on the TV show they've had bare breasts.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure. Well,
the rumor is one of the girls they had, one of the dancing girls, was uncomfortable because her breasts were not quite ample enough. So she was uncomfortable. She wasn't upset showing her breasts, just that they weren't large enough. Yeah. So this,
she was comparing herself.
Everybody's wearing identically shiny, clearly plastic bosoms. Yeah. So they do this big dance number.
I think that kind of works with it has a kind of a Rockettes feel to it. And one of their claims is they're almost identical. All of them are in unison and we're doing
they are
wearing the same exact thing. And so it kind of works.
And they have identical breasts.
I like how even the woman ringing the bell in the video has her boobs out.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just, and the angels, I think the angels flying, right?
The angels that are hanging from ropes. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Them too. Yeah. So, but the song though, of course I'm talking about the video and the dancers, but I mean the song is sung by, this Graham Chapman in, Tony Bennett gear. And things like they're talking about the wonders of Christmas, but it's all happening in heaven, which is paradise, and it's replete with the joys of earthbound materialism, including Sony Walkman and the latest video games. it's pretty fun and hokey, and it always took it as like it's a Christmas song, but only technically because Christmas is in it. It's just kind of this weird, crazy ending to an otherwise disjointed but delightfully funny film.
It's Christmas in heaven. There's great films on TV. The Sound of Music, twice an hour, and Jaws 1, 2, and 3.
There's gifts for all the family. There's toiletries and trains.
There's Sony Walkman headphone sets and the latest video games.
Well, heaven is essentially what we wanted as kids in the 1980s, right? I mean, it seems like
you wanted bare-breasted, plastic-boobed angels dancing. It's just like.
Let's see, 1983. I was 12. Pass.
Pass. I'm only 12.
Catch up with me in a year.
I'll take the Walkman, please.
Yes.
Oh, hey, I want to tell you guys about a song, "Christmas with Satan," by James White, who I believe is now known as James Chance, from the album A Christmas Record in 1982. So here's the deal. In the early 1980s, the folks at ZE Records directed their artists to each create a Christmas song for a compilation album. The result was 1981's Christmas Record, which included a holiday classic that we're going to get to later in the list, is my favorite, I think my favorite of all time Christmas song, certainly from the 1980s. But aside from that, the album is otherwise unremarkable. But when the LP was re-released in 1982, the producers replaced some of the tracks on the original album with new ones, including what may be the worst holiday song ever created in any decade. The addition of this song, "Christmas with Satan" by James White, tells the story, just like any classic.
Wait, it tells a story? When I heard it, it was rambling, mumbling garbage. Oh, so if there's a story.
The song's kind of like a two-parter. First is cacophonous nonsense, and the second half is cacophonous nonsense with a story.
Okay.
So in the second half, it tells the story of a distraught man who commits suicide during the holidays, and then the merrymaking begins.
You know, like on Christmas.
Yeah. The lack of mirth in the lyrics is not the reason it's less successful. The music, as I mentioned, is this atonal cacophony of various holiday classics playing essentially at the same time.
Right.
That was best described by hipchristmas.com as a, quote, droll, blasphemous, nearly tuneless piece of skronk, end quote. Yes, skronk.
Sounds good.
Skronk?
They went there.
What does skronk mean?
You had to bleep that.
It's only in the UK. All right, let me play some of "Christmas with Satan."
You have to.
This might be the part that you didn't get to, John.
There's a little bit of rhythm.
I'm being serious. After the noise, it stops, and then this starts.
There's a tiny bit of rhythm,
and you almost think it's going to be music.
Almost.
It's just a different kind of awful.
Christmas with the devil. It's gotta be a hell of a party.
I'm pretty sure he's making this song up as he goes.
I hope so.
To me, this sounds like Danny Elfman with Oingo Boingo working something out.
Oh,
that's an insult to Oingo Boingo.
Well, then it becomes something masterful, you know, once they shape it.
Right. They're just, this is like before the orchestra's tuning and it's just they're all making their own noises. Yeah. The song will start in a minute. Stand
almost
by.
It's like they all have headphones on. Like, oh, you're playing too? I didn't know.
Because you guys wouldn't tell me. I looked up the word skronk.
Oh, that's a real word.
It's a real word.
Oh.
I didn't tell you because I thought it was just someone.
I wasn't withholding information. I thought it was a baloney word.
I thought it was
onomatopoeia or something.
The definition is, you're going to like this. Popular music of a kind that is experimental and deliberately discordant. And then it gives an example sentence.
Yeah.
And it says, in the right hands, skronk can be sublime.
Oh, I thought you were going to say See Christmas with Satan.
For a bad example.
All right, Kat, you're on.
This song that I'm going to talk about is called Santa's Beard by They Might Be Giants from their album Lincoln. It's from 1988. And while it may not be the first song about infidelity and Kris Kringle, kind of like I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. We all know that one. It's the most overt. The track tells the tale of a man who is troubled by his wife's apparent enthusiasm for a friend who dons a red suit each Christmas.
This guy.
The seemingly unfaithful wife sits on the faux Santa's knee and beckons him to stand beneath the mistletoe as well. And lately she's been humming cheating songs. Cheating songs?
Yeah. That's a line from the song. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of cheating songs. I know.
You know, I guarantee it's a country song, so.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Country music, all right. It's got to be.
You're cheating hard. Yep. There you go.
Right.
That makes sense. Okay. I guess I'm not a
country fan. Yeah, I'm not either.
A listener of cheating songs.
Yeah. You know, Jolene. That's a potential cheating song.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Good point. Oh.
It's a good one,
I didn't
too.
Think about that. So this tune, which has that special brand of They Might Be Giants New Wave, is pure 1980s catchiness.
Yeah.
And while the cuckold at the center of the tale laments that his friend Santa is breaking cuckold. Up his home.
I can't say cuckold.
Just, I'm putting that on my soundboard.
Cuckold.
Now, while you're recovering, Kat, when I listened to this song and I started reading, so I listened to it on YouTube. I never heard it before in preparation for this show.
Right.
And I learned something in the comments that, after I listened to it a couple of times, I'm like, that's spot on. And apparently that's not interpretive. That's legitimately true. Uh-huh. This is I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, but it's from the husband's point of view rather than the child. Mm.
Oh, that makes perfect sense.
It's all the same little story beats. Mm-hmm. The same things are happening, but it's from, because I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus ostensibly is actually supposed to be the daddy dressed up.
Yes.
This takes the approach that it wasn't. Right. It's actually Santa and daddy's witnessing it as well.
Oh, you know what? They should have added the line about how he spots his kid hiding in the background watching her with Santa.
Yep.
Yes. Oh, man. So how do I finish that sentence? Because I didn't really finish that sentence.
Just pick it up from a cuckold.
You could just and really hit the sound. The just really, sounds in there.
I want to have to bleep you. I want to hear it so hard.
Cuckold.
Once a year, my friend puts on a red suit and hangs around with me and my.
I got to tell you, I love this song. I didn't know it except until we were researching this list.
I didn't either.
But
it's cute.
Yeah. I agree with what you said, Kat. It's just, it's so 1980s and early 1980s in that new wavy kind of way. Like the Waitresses reminds me of that too. Ah.
I saw my baby wearing Santa's beard.
So this next song is Santa Claus Has Got the AIDS This Year.
That is a classic, yeah.
It's by Tiny Tim.
The AIDS.
Yep.
You know that emoji with just the eyes and no nothing else below it? It's just a blank look. Mm-hmm. That's when I first looked into this, that was the look on my face. Oh. I just couldn't believe it. So years after this, truly, I don't even know what to call this song. I wanted to say horrible song was recorded. Tiny Tim provided a naive, and albeit dubious explanation for his controversial Christmas tune. According to Tim, he wrote the song in 1980 or 1981 at a time when AIDS was a very, very minor word. In quotes, that's what that was. Yeah. And it was more associated with its homophone, AIDS, AYDS, which is an appetite suppressant.
Do you guys remember that?
Mm. No.
I do.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But I don't buy it.
Yeah.
Why would you even bother making a song about AIDS if it wasn't popular enough to get you listens?
Right.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
Like I don't buy Tiny Tim's like, oh, well, it wasn't really a big deal back then. Because that's how Tiny Tim sounds.
Actually, that's a, yes, that was a nice.
It already was. In fact, that's why the diet, the appetite suppressant changed their name, because AIDS was such a big damn deal. They had to stop calling themselves, want to lose weight? You need AIDS. Yeah. Don't do that.
No.
All right,
no.
Let's not call it that.
So then why would he have written this song then?
Well, he insists that the song was not made for humor, quote.
Yep, he succeeded.
And also, he said the idea sounded funny.
So both are true. He's covering all his bases.
He's
Is it Tiny Tim or Doomcock?
He clean there.
Either way, he's right.
Oh, but the track wasn't recorded and released until 1985. And that's at a time when Rock Hudson and Ryan White had both put a face on this terrible virus. And if that doesn't remove doubt that Tim didn't understand the implications of the tune, Tim's agent threatened to drop his client if he were to record it. But of course, Tim ignored the warning, leaving us with this curious slice of 1980s nostalgia. I wonder if he ever did get dropped.
Oh, this is Santa Claus saying I won't be around this year. I'm a bit sick. Santa Claus has got the AIDS this year, and he won't be round to spread his Christmas cheer. The reindeer all
you probably all know the equation, right? That tragedy plus time equals comedy. But it didn't work this time.
Not enough.
Didn't really pan out.
No. I don't know if there's ever enough time. Oh, man.
I love how it sounds like Another One Rides the Bus, and it was recorded in a bathroom. Or
you mean in the lack of audio fidelity, not in the quality or caliber of the music.
Oh, gosh, I shouldn't even invoke Weird Al. Yeah, you're right. So, look, there's a number of songs on this list that are quirky. Some even maybe offensive and controversial.
Mm-hmm.
But this one may put them all to shame, and it's guaranteed not to be on the Pandora special story.
This is how we test our audience and find out where the line is. Mm-hmm.
The line is in when they stop listening. Like we look at their retention. And
is it drops off? Exactly.
Yeah, right after this when I see
the
this
drop
word.
Off line.
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell you guys about Fuck Christmas by Fear.
Do you?
Oh, ho, ho.
1982
I knew that was coming.
Now, look, to Fear's credit, many of the songs on this list depict an underrepresented holiday experience. But it's no surprise that Lee Ving's contribution to the holiday is equal parts Charles Dickens and Sam Kinison. What is curious about the expletive-laden track, however, is that it was only the second single from Fear.
Huh.
So this, infamous, I want to say, punk rock band known for many other songs, probably better known for these other punk rock songs. Second song was this one. While it was recorded during the sessions that produced their debut album, The Record, it was not released until months later. In addition to the uncensored original version, they also have a version that you will hear on Pandora, the identical Beep Christmas. with censored profanity. I don't know that you're going to hear that on Pandora. I'm not going to do that. That's not going to be, I'm not even going to do that. With censored profanity, which was released for radio airplay. And the song itself, I think we could almost hear the whole song if it's not on here. It's like 47 seconds long.
It's a super short song. Yep.
This is another one I never heard before. I saw the title. I was prepared to hate it.
Yeah. Mm.
And finally, look, I'm not offended by profanity at all.
Yeah.
So it's not, that's not what bothered me. It just felt pandering to use, oh, we'll just say fuck Christmas because that's going to be really salacious and get, people wondering what it is. But actually when I heard it, this is the kind of catharsis that I think people that actually suffer from, was it like seasonal affective disorder or whatever? Like you could keep that depression at bay by using this as a, I just need to get out of my system. I'm just going to listen to this song and go, I hate this thing. Yes. I think it could be therapeutic for people that have trouble with the holidays. It's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Along the lines of what you're saying, John, the contrast of this kind of you know, more sort of melodic and sort of, you know, downbeat opening, which sets up the idea that, look, not everybody is having a good holiday.
Exactly.
Right.
Sets up the fact that we're going to tell Christmas what we are going to tell Christmas.
Where to go, what to do, how to do it.
The next song that I looked at here is called What Can You Get a Wookiee for Christmas?
I can't do that. Not enough. Spit in my throat, sorry.
Not enough.
Is that what that cup is filled with?
Spit.
It is now.
He didn't have enough spit in his throat, and then he took a drink.
Put some more spit in there.
It started empty. I'm filling it throughout the show.
Oh, that straw goes down. Is going down.
It is, right. Oh. It's pure backwash.
It's like being at the dentist, a little Mr. Thirsty, you know. Like.
Pure backwash. 100% backwash.
So that title again is... What can you get a Wookiee for Christmas when he already owns a comb?
Oh, the subtitle.
Yes, that's a parenthetical subtitle there. Yeah. And by Mecco?
Oh, Mecco? I love Mecco.
How do I say that?
Okay, yeah, Mecco.
All right, there you go. Mecco.
You know, Mecco.
This is from 1980. So if the Star Wars holiday special is the Porkins of galactic Christmases, this song is the Jar Jar Binks. Mecco, who brought us the light years better Star Wars and other galactic funk, produced this collection of holiday songs with a tenuous connection to Star Wars. Even if you're to ignore the questions as to how Santa Claus or Christmas or Jesus, for that matter, exist a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, you're still left with awful music. This confounding track takes the madness a step further and has a group of droids pondering what to get Chewbacca for Christmas. When I was listening, I even forgot that it was droids. I'm like, are these elves? What is this?
And the whole song, Cat, is hair-centric. It's like he already owns a comb. Yes. He doesn't use shaving cream. Yeah. I think shampoo is mentioned. Nobody considers getting him a throat lozenge. I mean, that's what Chewbacca needs for Christmas. Whatever. They're like, excuse me. Thank you.
Or a special cup like you have.
But the biggest thing about it, right, is that Wookiees don't even celebrate Christmas. They have Life Day.
I know where Life Day is a thing from that special. That's what I know for sure.
You know, Kat, this record is so awful. I was convinced it was a fan-made record.
It sounded okay to me. I mean, it sounded dumb, but it sounded freshly made.
Well, yeah, I've never heard the whole album. I'm sure there's other songs, right?
Yes. Like,
that are... There's more?
But wait.
There's more. But wait, get this. Yes. It was... actually licensed by Lucasfilm.
Oh, Lucas trying to squeeze the last nickel out of every bit of merchandising.
Although, fun fact, Anthony Daniels reprises his role as C-3PO to narrate the album, apparently. Oh. I really do want to hear the whole thing. I'm really curious. Mm-hmm. So, get this. This song reached number 69 on the Billboard Hot 100
in
1980.
It ranked at all is the surprising thing. Forget the number and haha, the number, because I'm immature. But the point is that it's there at all, anywhere.
Yeah, it's got to be on the back of Star Wars. I mean, it's true, just solely on the back of Star Wars. Let me see, we have a scarf. That's enough. I can't take it. Those first fake droid voices.
They remind me of the...
They're chipmunks.
The Phantom Menace, the Roger, Roger.
Oh, the droids,
guys. Yeah,
that's why I hate them. Now I remember. Yeah.
Okay. Can we cleanse our palate with a good song now? Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The next one I want to talk about is Christmas at Ground Zero by the inimitable Weird Al Yankovic.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 1986. It's from Polka Party. If any lesson can be learned from Christmas at Ground Zero, it's this: nobody tell Weird Al Yankovic what to do. He created this song only after his record label insisted that he record a Christmas album.
Oh,
I'll show you.
What is that called? Malicious compliance.
Wow.
He presented this tune about celebrating the Yuletide while fleeing nuclear annihilation. However, the higher ups at Scotti Brothers, who was his label at the time, withdrew their demands for holiday LP on the basis of this song.
No, we're good. We're good, actually, Al. That's fine. Yeah. You just had to say you didn't want to do it.
That would have been enough. But then he wanted to release this as a single because it turned out well. And the label said, no, we're not going to do that either.
Oh, man.
He was determined, though, to spread this Christmas cheer that he had devised, which is a wonderfully morbid Christmas song, by the way. And perhaps one of my wife's favorite Christmas songs, I will say.
Is that right?
It is. Yeah. Just because it's such a, if you don't listen to the actual, like if it's a different language, it would just be a great Christmas song.
Oh yeah. It sounds like a classic Christmas song.
It sounds fantastic. Oh, it almost sounds like a 50s era Christmas song in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah.
So look, the music video that Yankovic himself produced, mostly using like stock footage of, you know, duck and cover atomic bomb explosions and kids getting under desks and stuff.
Right.
The studio eventually said, okay, fine, we'll release the track. And they, you know, so it's on the polka party. Following the tragic events of September 11th, though, airplay of the song evaporated, as you might imagine, tragedy. Yankovic is no longer able to perform this song live. Because too many people misunderstand the connotations of ground zero, what that means.
Right, I can see that. Yeah.
It was never a reference to 9/11. We just know, you know, ground zero is where the bomb falls. That's where that's where the business happens in a nuclear attack.
Yes.
It never occurred to me that he's got a whole generation or two maybe at this point that grew up post 9/11. So that would be their only.
They wouldn't know the difference.
To that phrase, ground zero.
There are a couple of I mean, you're going to play a sample, I know, Will, but there are a couple of great lines that I have to call out. That's just chef's kiss writing.
Okay.
Going to duck and cover with my Yuletide lover underneath the mistletoe. Again, just sounds like a great Christmas song. And going to dodge debris while we trim the tree underneath the mushroom cloud.
Oh, my goodness.
A couple of my favorites. Yeah.
Yep.
Everywhere the atom bombs are dropping. It's the end of all humanity. No more time for last minute shopping. It's time to face your final destiny. It's Christmas at ground zero. There's panic in the crowd. We can dodge debris while we trim the tree.
There you go.
You know, kind of like the Fear song with the high contrast. You know, and so much of Weird Al's stuff is there's the high contrast. That's what brings the humor.
Right. It's the turn, is that what they call it in comedy?
It's the juxtaposition of, you know, it's like a wonderful Christmas song that happens to have, you know, gruesome tragedy taking place within it.
Yes. The bleak concepts that are being presented are like, yay.
He's just a genius comic. That's why.
Absolutely. Yep. Tiny Tim is not. Okay. So this next song, I'd be shocked if anybody didn't know this one.
Yep.
Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. By Elmo and Patsy Trigg Shropshire. I never knew who did this song until looking into it. I couldn't have told you. This was first self-released in 1979 to very little fanfare. But the Shropshires re-recorded and re-released it in 1982.
Yeah.
And since then, just like Grandma with Santa's Reindeer, we can do little to escape it each year. It's about the horrifying demise of an elderly woman at the... At the hooves of a beloved caribou. Yeah. But it's not without its controversy. In 2016, an expert on gender and pop cultural studies noted that, quote, grandma is positioned as someone who gets in the way of male fun. And so her death is something to celebrate. Grandpa is quick to return to, quote, watching football, drinking beer, and playing cards with Cousin Mel.
Not even cold yet.
It bothers me when people take something out of context and try to shove it into a gender studies class, right?
Yeah, like if you look at it at the events, like, okay, yes, we could talk about it that way, but it's not how it was.
Actually, this is very sexist.
Future Robert says it's true.
Too much. So it wasn't even without controversy when it was first released.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, well, according to Elmo Shropshire, while appearing at a club, the Grey Panther picketed the duo's performance.
They sound terrifying.
They're not as committed as the other group.
They're just a
lighter shade.
Yeah,
so light. It's shady.
Well, it's because of their hair, right? It's an elderly. It's an elderly group, right? Elderly activists.
They called the song ageist, sexist, and violent. So anyway, the attention only served to highlight the song and usher it onto the charts.
I wish somebody would hate me a little more so I would get more exposure. Yeah. That'd be great.
Ooh, I could become a doom cock for you, right?
I got so many great clips of Scat this week.
Oh, no!
Grandma got run over by a reindeer. Walking home.
We could all just sing along to this.
I gotta say, I'm not a huge fan of the song, but I really like this guy's voice.
Ah.
But as for me and Grandpa, we believe.
And Doesn't he sound like someone named Elmo?
He does.
Ultimately,
right.
The song was picked up by Epic Records in 1984. Mm. And according to Shropshire, it outsold Thriller in December of that year.
Come on.
According to anybody else?
Come on, Elmo.
What?
No one's buying that.
Single? Even that,
Did they ask him if he wrote this about...
No.
He intended it to be a sexist, violent, ageist song?
Well, he says that this song is more about proving that Santa exists rather than killing off grandma in a drive-by hoofing.
Because if he didn't exist, he could not kill this elderly woman, could he?
That's right.
Where are his other songs? Why haven't I heard the entire album from Elmo?
Oh, he has, every track is a different family member getting killed off in a bizarre way.
I really want to hear it now.
Mm-hmm. At different holidays?
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Okay. All right.
Cousin Earl got run over by a leprechaun.
Yeah. My favorite is Uncle Jacob got run over during Hanukkah.
Straight to Spotify.
Hey, I want to tell you guys about, what's that, John?
Straight to Spotify with that one.
Or Pandora.
Whatever it is.
Hey, I want to tell you guys about Merry Christmas. Dude, you say parens? I don't want to fight tonight.
Right.
It's a song by the Ramones. Came out in 1989. Now, look, sure, if you're familiar with the song you're about to hear it, it's the same 1-4-5 chord progression in every single Ramones song, essentially. Certainly in their hits, Blitzkrieg Bop, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And sure, Joey deftly unfolds, as he does on so many other tunes, the simple phrase "Merry Christmas" like a multi-syllabic accordion. He turns that into so many notes.
Oh my God.
But that's exactly what you want from the Ramones. So released on 1989's Brain Drain, which also includes Pet Sematary, by the way, and Palisades Park, two other maybe more popular songs. The song finds Joey pleading with someone to avoid conflict on Christmas. And although he's singing to his quote, baby, it's easy to imagine the lyrics are a subtle message to bandmate Johnny, with whom Joey was often at odds. You can see the song, just look up the history of the song, The KKK Took My Baby Away, for more information about that conflict.
Wow.
But as is true as of other songs on this list, it's fueled by their classic punk sound that Ramones sing a tale many of us can relate to during the holiday season.
Mm-hmm. You know, of all the songs we talk about in this list, this is the least Christmas of all the songs.
Huh.
I don't think it's a Christmas song. It just happens to be a couple fighting. Oh, and it's Christmas, by the way. You know, it's
okay. All right.
I mean, I go driving in December and I stop at a red light. It's like, Christmas red light. No, it just happens to happen at Christmas.
Green too.
Yeah. Everybody's, it's red and green. Perfect. No, it's just so not a Christmas song other than the word Christmas is in it. Yeah. It's
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think the interesting thing is, like some of the other songs, they do take an angle that's not usually sung about, a slice of life during the holidays that's probably more common than, you know, we care to take a look at or admit, that tensions are high during these holidays and it tends to lead to more, you know, conflict.
I agree with all of that, but that is a condition that people get in during the holidays, but that doesn't make this a Christmas song. Okay. This is more of a humanity's song to talk about, holidays are rough on everybody. Like there's no arc that has redemption or everything gets better or, you know, we all get a fruit cake or whatever great things are going to happen at the end of the song.
There's no jingle bells.
Let's not fight. The end. It's kind of.
Merry Christmas. I don't want to fight tonight with you.
Before the song starts, it sounds Christmassy and then it's not.
All right. Well, there you go. All right. That's fine. It's fine.
It's another candidate for this song is just 6 words long.
You know, I think the thing for me is, you know, what I like about the Ramones is consistent with this song, you know, so since I like the Ramones other songs, this one's good too. But I see your point, John. Certainly.
You know, I have to say out of this list, I consider myself somewhat of a Christmas song aficionado, but I really only knew about three.
Okay. Well, these are the quirkiest Christmas songs from the 1980s. Okay.
That's right.
Well, let's try this one, Kat, and see if you're familiar with this one.
Okay.
Santa Claus is Watching You by comedic musician Ray Stevens, 1985.
I mean, that's not different than Santa Claus is Coming to Town, right? I mean, we know he sees you.
It's a little more salacious than that, actually. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So, well, we should all know, like, Mississippi Squirrel Revival and the Shriners Convention. There's so many great Ray Stevens songs. I love his work. He's an accomplished artist in his own right, Grammy Award winning singer, songwriter. Mm-hmm. But he's equally known for classics like his moving cover of Misty.
I love
And over the top comedic tracks like The Streak.
Oh, yeah. And they're calling it The Streak.
He likes to show off his physique. Here, Stevens recreates the sound of 1950s oldie song, like maybe like Yakety Yak by the Coasters. It's that kind of little boppy song. But it's to warn his sweetheart about the dangers of unrequited love.
Oh.
Blue balls. Excuse me.
Oh. Straight to Pandora.
I'll have a blue Christmas.
Without you, without you. Can't you write? Can't. I never realized.
But he takes the stuff we know about Santa, like from Santa Claus is coming to town, and like he sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake, like all the omniscience of Santa is kind of worked into this. But it makes a new caveat in our pact with Kris Kringle is that in addition to not pouting or crying, you must also give Ray Stevens good lovin', or Santa is going to be upset with you and you'll be sorry.
Wow.
It's effectively, you know, give me love or Santa will not be happy with you. So put out, sister. That's effectively what he's saying in this song.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
And while the lyrics seem different when viewed through the prism of today's kind of Me Too environment and, you know, kind of egalitarian, kind of respectful environment that we didn't have back when we were running people over with reindeer.
That's right.
Right. And going straight to watching football.
Yeah. The video for this track does see Ray Stevens carted away by the police and Santa canoodling with his lover because he didn't get love. Santa got the love.
Oh, good. Well, there. That is justice then for being a stalker.
Yeah. Though this came out in 1985, it was initially recorded, though, in, let's see, when was that? 1962. Ray Stevens did a single with the Merry Melody Singers, but then later he did the version you know in 85 on Meta Records.
So I wonder if even social norms were even more different 20 years
even
prior.
More. It's the Christmas version of Put Out or Get Out, effectively.
What is that? What song is that?
This song is the Christmas version.
No, what is Put Out or Get Out? Oh, you're saying, the phrase.
It's a saying.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying there's another song.
That's Jones' philosophy, Will, right?
You know.
By the Tabernacle Choir, Put Out or Get Out. And okay.
It's made it number 7 on the charts.
Now, baby doll, sweet pie, sugar plum, honey bun, angel face, you know you better be good. And act like true fine love, sure.
It is very Yakety Yak.
Be careful. You say and do. 'Cause Santa Claus is watching you. He's everywhere. He's everywhere.
He's everywhere. I love that. He's everywhere. It is kind of, oh boy. Wow. I feel like we have to have a warning for any families listening to, for looking for 80s music on Pandora.
And Christmas, jolly Christmas.
This is an adult maybe list.
Right. Not to be confused with
party.
Ass, cash, or grass, nobody rides for free by the Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
I'm rethinking the whole Pandora thing. You know, I'm not even not sure that's really worth it.
Man. I was not familiar with this song, John.
Okay. Hey, I want to tell you guys about another song. So look, you guys know how much I love hip hop and there's been many hip hop Christmas tracks, but I want to tell you about Santa's Rap by the Treacherous Three, which came out in 1984.
Yep.
Sure. You could you could point to Run DMC's Christmas in Hollis as a 1980s classic, holiday tune. But this one, which first appeared in Beat Street, shows the Treacherous Three rapping honestly about their urban holiday experience. The grievances aired here make it clear that Santa, who's portrayed by pre-Solo Cool Moe Dee, by the way, fails to deliver each year. The biggest disappointment characterized by the rappers, and I love this, is actually the highlight of the song, a beatbox performance by a young Dougie Fresh. And while some of the lyrics are just pure 1980s, we should have known better, but didn't, the song is a more cynical and therefore authentic Christmas carol.
That ain't a G.I. Joe, that's a G.I. jerk with a kung fu grip that don't even work. So all I did was just put him away because my G.I. Joe looked G.I. gay.
That's why you don't get presents now. Cause it just ingrates. G.I. Joe's gay, what difference does it make? After all, he's just a doll, ain't too much he can do. If you ask me, boy, I ain't too sure about you.
Listen, Bloto, with your big fat suit. Next time, say no, don't send no substitute. Because I asked you for a beatbox and you know what I got? Dougie Fresh, you know that kid from down the block.
This thing is wonderful. I don't know how I missed this all my life, but maybe my favorite song in this list is this Santa's Rap. My favorite line in it is about a third of the way through. Mm-hmm. Y'all should be glad I didn't quit because I'm getting too old for this Santa Claus shit.
Yes.
I'm like, now I know what we're in for with this song. Like, that's when they first, because it's Santa just being indignant. Like, hey, don't be back talking to me. I'm Santa. I'm getting too old for this. Love it.
Don't you being grateful.
It's wonderful.
Look, finally, I want to tell you about, it's a quirky Christmas song, but it also happens to be my favorite from the 1980s. And I'm talking about Christmas Rapping by the Waitresses, mm-hmm. which came out in 1981. As I mentioned earlier, when we were talking about the They Might Be Giants song, mm-hmm. the sound of the Waitresses,
yeah,
including this song, is just to me so iconic early 1980s.
Yep.
I teased it twice already. As I noted earlier, in 1981, as I told you, ZE Records asked each of its artists to record a Christmas song for a compilation mm-hmm. album. Well,
yes.
While the 1982 re-release of the album included the worst Christmas song ever, Christmas with Satan.
Oh, yeah.
The original version of the LP features one of the best. It was intended to be a spoof of Curtis Blow's Christmas Rappin', R.A.P., which came out in 1979.
Okay.
It's a bouncy convergence of early 1980s new wave and late 1970s funk. If you listen again, you'll note that the song is actually rapped by Patty Donahue, unlike the other songs, you know, where she's singing. Mm-hmm. Songwriter and founder of the Waitresses, Chris Butler, with whom we spoke, I don't know, a while ago.
Yeah.
And lives close by and invited me to his house. And his house, by the way, was Jeffrey Dahmer's house at one point.
No.
I think it was the first house he buried a body in or killed somebody in. I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Anyway. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. And thanks, guys, for listening. anyway, Chris Butler, he assembled the track from unused riffs and finished the lyrics in a cab on the way to the recording studio.
Oh, my gosh.
The tale of the protagonist, the point of view woman's dislike of the holiday was born of Butler's own hatred for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
Quote, everybody I knew in New York was running around like a bunch of fiends, said Butler. Quote, it wasn't about joy, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
Although the song is ubiquitous during the holidays today, it failed to chart in the U.S. At the time of its release, unlike What to Buy a Wookiee for Christmas.
And this song didn't.
Yeah. Although it did reach number 45 in the U.K.
You know, not for nothing, we're on a show with 1980s in its title. This is by far the most 1980s sounding song on this list.
Christmas
or not, this is just like, it screams 80s. Like, I want to put on leg warmers when I hear this song. It just sounds awesome. Don't you wear leg warmers?
I have a pair upstairs.
I love this song. Holy cow. Humbug. I think I have the whole song here just because I love it. All right, that's enough of that. All right, hey, that's the list.
Wait, I wanted to say something. I love the saxophone in that song, right? Isn't there a... Yep.
Yeah. Chris Butler is a really just an amazing composer.
Mm-hmm.
These, sort of the, I don't know, the top 40 or poppy nature and the popularity of some songs belies how complex some of his arrangements are.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is no exception. All right. Hey, that is the list. I know we missed some because I could think of songs off the top of my head already that could have been on here, but for the fact that we limited it to just songs, whatever that number was, I said in there. 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 4, 12, 9. But no more than 12.
3.14.
A number of 1 to 12 songs.
87%.
So look, you can email me directly, will@1980s now, and tell me the song I missed. Maybe we'll do a follow-up at some point.
That'll teach you
holiday season.
Email Will.
Yeah. Okay, folks. Hey, we will talk to you again next time on 1980s Now.
Until next time.
Bye-bye.